Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast. Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinee Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today, on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for watching on YouTube. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us. I almost feel bad about this because I've been saying for about the last year that she next, but it kind of feel like she's now. Check her out on all of our basketball coverage. You over there on MSG also, Monica McNutt?
Correct. MSG Networks, the glorious New York Knicks.
How you be over there not laughing?
Bo, honestly, it is an exercise in artful communication oftentimes.
I'm just saying, like, I'd be over there laughing all the time. Like, I feel like that's the thing about the Knicks. At least it's funny. You know what I'm saying? And Knicks fans make it even funnier. So I imagine you're surrounded by people who want to laugh but afraid.
So it's funny because my colleagues have all been like, oh, man, you're so optimistic. Come on, just come on. So the loss to Oklahoma City, they were like, it looks like we finally got you. Because I was so baffled. But,
Right. You were optimistic?
Bo, by nature, I'm an optimist, sometimes naively so. But, you know, being with a team day to day, that is just not a good fit top down. Quickly rattles that.
Well, I mean, so last year was interesting. Like, I remember I was talking to Charles Barkley about this when the playoffs come around. And Charles is really good at crystallizing things to the most simple forms. And he was just like, you ain't gonna win, but so much playing hard. Like, they played so hard every game last year, and that could get you over, especially in a year that was like last year was. And now we at year two, and grinding just ain't gonna be sufficient.
Yeah, you're right. That's a perfect encapsulation. I also, and I've said this on air, I have wondered if last year the only choice you had was to be at the crib or be in the gym. And I think that for this squad created a level of focus, created a bubble, if it's okay to use that word, and they were able to outkick the coverage. And this year is not the case. I mean, the East is really good this year. It's like, it's been really fun.
Yeah. The dude I feel bad for in this is Julius Randle. And the reason is he's the best player on that team. It's not his fault that there's not somebody on the team who is better than him. But you just ain't gonna win that much with Julius Randle as your best player. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like that's not where the ceiling on your team is supposed to be. But it ain't on him. They don't get anybody else.
Yeah. And I think astute folks even acknowledged that last year. I mean, look at the way it went down with the Hawks in the playoffs, right? Like, I was talking to Chris Paul about this, and he was like, you know, playoffs, there's no luck, right? Like, this is a series. We know your tendencies. You see us. You're going to see us every other day. Like, you can't get around that. And so I think as fun as the regular season was, the way the playoffs ended was sort of an omen in terms of what's ahead. Now, I will say the emergence of RJ Barrett before his ankle injury is a big time positive. I don't know what they're going to do with Cam Reddish. I am disappointed by the obvious disconnect between the head coach and the front office that seems to just be so blatantly painful. But RJ's emerging, and that is encouraging.
Yeah, well, I think there's two things interesting with the front office. One is talking about Julius Randle. They didn't do what a lot of teams do, which is feel obligated to give somebody a max just because they had a really good year. And they actually gave Randle a contract that's about in line with what a Julius Randle goes for. I thought that hiring Tibbs, I thought it was the right decision for the short term because they just needed to be credible. Like, they had spent so long not being credible. And if nothing else, Tibbs is going to give you a credible team. But now it's year two. Okay, what are we going to figure out? But I actually have some faith in this front office. And I have not said that, I don't think, since Pat Riley left.
You know, been around this much this year, having a chance to shake some hands and meet some people, not that I'm in elite secret meetings or anything, but just kind of watching. And this may be where I'm naive and optimistic, Bo. I have a hard time believing that in an era where not just athletes, but people in general are so mindful of their brand, right? I just have a hard time believing that somebody's not going to be willing to tackle the beast that is the New York Knicks from a brand perspective.
Somebody going to do it.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure when.
Well, what I was hearing at the end of last year was, we got to remember, there's a whole generation of players that have never seen Madison Square Garden jump, right? Like, they might have enjoyed playing there or, like, got dug what the vibe was, but they'd never seen it jump. And the players saw it jump last year, and that there was a few of them that were like, yo, this is the one that I want. Like, a couple of guys that we'd heard about, you know, maybe trying to get out of where they want to go, and the whisper was, no, watch. If they want to go somewhere, that's the place that they want to go. And you don't have to come in there and win a championship, I don't think.
You don't.
You just got to give them something to feel good about.
I think it's going to happen. And I will say, being with this team daily, people say whatever they want about Knicks fans, but they are truly diehard, and I have tremendous respect for them.
Yo, I have to say, being in New York has made me like them. Mm-hmm. Being away from New York makes you hate them, because all you get is the everything is better in New York people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, of course, the best part about Knicks fans is nobody takes it to 10 faster than they do. Two-game
so
winning
true.
Streak, man, and they are all straight there. And it's so wild, because it's not like they've ever won a championship like in anybody's recent memory. Only person in MSG who remembers the championship is Clyde. And these folks, anytime they just get a whiff of the littlest bit of success, they're there. And it gets to be so funny. And then their hearts get broken.
They
but they're with
broken.
It. Like, they, to me, are like Cowboys fans. You can't be a bandwagon jumper if you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no payoff.
Mm-hmm.
There's been mm-hmm. none, but they keep coming back.
And even though they do go from 0 to 100 so quickly, somewhere in there, they're actually really smart and like paying attention, having conversations about rotations, execution, the whole bit. Like, we don't always agree per se, but in terms of them communicating, engaging, being like, oh, well, that's something to think about. I can't respond to every tweet about why you didn't call so-and-so out. I have to remember who signs my checks.
It's very interesting. You keep making allusions to it. I'll just be the one to say the dolling stuff over here. You can go over there and be quiet. I ain't really trying to mess up your money. You know what I'm saying?
That
there's an elephant in the room that Monica done got no idea what I'm talking about right now. And I'm not going to put her in no sort of position on that. I absolutely refuse to do that. But I mean, that's what the French call the thing. It is the thing. But just to keep you safe, I keep this moving to a broader discussion of the NBA. Did you make the trip to Cleveland for the All-Star game?
Dude, Bo, it was the most complicated trip ever, but I got there and I gotta say it was worth it.
Really? I mean, I'm gonna be honest, I've never been to Cleveland, so I try to be very careful before I insult the place. But it is February, and I was like, maybe the 100th NBA anniversary, I'd be down to go to Cleveland for it. But the 75th just wasn't going to be it. I thought the halftime thing, I always love those things, right? When they bring everybody that's back out there. I don't know about you, but it was kind of heartwarming to see in the back that apparently Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett had made up. And then Ray Allen showed out all of them in front of all the people. It didn't do nothing.
That, the 75th thing, now I think, from TV, y'all got some nuggets that I didn't get being courtside. It's hard to put into words, Bo. I mean, you're somebody that's a historian of sports and watch basketball and the whole bit, but like to see all those guys together. And for me, like, it just reminds me of coming up, following my dad, hanging out with his friends. Like, the camaraderie that the game creates is just so cool. Like, it was absolutely incredible. I'm talking to Giannis right afterward, and he's like, I was about to cry. Like, that was crazy. And of course, LeBron walks by and is like, I was about to lose it, dog. Like, it was just so moving. Even Dennis Rodman, I don't know if y'all can see it on TV, because for a second, I thought he was finna take off. Like, he was doing his own thing for sure. But Allen Iverson, like, just the reverence that they have for one another and to see that compilation of success in the game, it was really, really incredible.
If you think I missed the low-key flex of you guys got some nuggets on TV that I missed because I was courtside, you got me mixed up with somebody else. I ain't mad at all. She's like, lucky for you guys at home, you could see some things on the screen that I was not able to see from the best seats in the house.
It was so cool, Bo. Like, it was so cool.
Yeah, what I always wonder on that, Like, the old-timers that be coming back? Like, who Bob Pettit hanging out with backstage? Is, like, is Allen Iverson walking up to Bob Pettit and thanking him for his contributions to the game?
I think there's some of that. Like, I can't remember who was sitting in front of me because I would need, like, my 75 media guy. But, like, the players that were playing in the game came over and shook hands. I think Jerry West was right in front of me at one point. And then it was somebody else I didn't recognize. But the guys came by and shook hands. Like, they were very aware of who was in the building. At halftime, Devin Booker was walking around with the Polaroid after Ja and Luca did their little speech. Bro, this was crazy. Two things that were crazy happened to me. I'm sitting there doing my notes and stuff, and somebody in a 75 jacket, an older white gentleman, walks by and is like, calls my name, and I look, and he's like, Monica, I love your work, right? And so I text my dad, like, somebody on the 75 team just gave me a comment, because I didn't recognize him. And so, but when the presentation came, it was Rick Barry, like, unsolicited. And I was like,
wow!
Oh my goodness! So that happened, and then, well, three things happened. Chuck came and gave me a hug and was like, you do a really great job. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then Michael, I promise you, bro, he looked right at me and waved and was like, hey, what's up? And
I
was like,
oh, you killing it. Me? I told you. I say, forget about that next. You now, you got to shout out for Mike. I don't think Dude, Mike knows who the hell I am.
I was like, is he like me? Like, I'm, but it had to be, it didn't have to be me, but I'm pretty sure it was me because I was standing by myself and like, you know, somebody just looks right at you. Like, you can't. Mm-hmm. But I was like, wow, look at this.
Yo, first of all, like, I don't know if you know all the levels to Rick Barry saying that, because, like, he's not the nicest man in the world. Like, for Rick Barry to decide to say something to you like that, you congratulations, you're Rick Barry's one friend.
I was like, oh, my gosh. But you know what, Bo? And candidly, and I think last year when I started to send, you were great about sending texts and encouraging me. I appreciate that so much from basketball people. Because there's so much noise that you have to cut through. And I always say you got to have a healthy relationship with no. And I know that I'm not everybody's cup of tea, right? And whether you like me stylistically, I hope at the end of the day, you would be like, I may disagree or agree, but the facts were made me think. And so I take a lot of pride in that, in this space. It was big time affirming for sure.
Yeah, well, the people in the game, like for me, because I never worked as like a beat writer, like on the ground around these dudes. They don't know me like that. So like the only respect that I can command from them is from like the respect for what I say, right? Like I'm not in a position to go win them over in public necessarily. And so when you come across people in the game and they actually respect what you say, it hits different, you know, yeah. Because like it's one thing to be like, oh, I just enjoy watching you or whatever. I find you to be entertaining. But those cats are hard on us, like by and large. And they should be, right? Because we just be out here popping shit about them for a living. I don't blame them at all. So like when you get people like that where it registers, like that's what's up. See, my story, like I got good Chuck stories because I'm cool with Dan. So that goes that way. But like your Michael Jordan story is the opposite of my Dr. J story. I saw Dr. J getting off a plane once and I tried to start a conversation with him. And it became very clear within about 45 seconds that he had never watched a moment of Highly Questionable. Not at all. Yet I was just another person hassling Dr. J in the airport. He did not seem to appreciate that. So I kept it moving. You know what I'm saying? But you got Mike out here waving at you. I got to get like you.
It was crazy. It was. I don't know, Bo. And then like, and not to make this conversation a therapy session or anything. But then you're like, every now and again, that imposter syndrome sneaks in. And I'm like, all right, it's not imposter syndrome. They're just going to call it butterflies because you care so much. But like you want to do work that you're proud of. And I think for me, the end goal in this space is to get to that analyst chair. I don't know if end goal, but one of the things that I want to do is to get to the analyst chair. And so just to get that vote of confidence meant the world. Like it was a big deal. And then after the game, here's me being sassy. 2 Chainz says the same thing, right? I gave Maria a big hug. She was talking to him. He said the same thing. And I was like, thank you. So then we're standing there. They're like, who's going to take the picture? I'm like, girl, ask 2 Chainz. So of course he took the picture for us and me. I'm like, why you got it sideways? And he's like, I'm trying to put you on game. And then I messed up the picture, but then he took it vertically too. But it was really cool. Like for people to be like, hey, like I enjoy your work. I am so mindful, as you mentioned it, entertaining versus like good job from basketball people are 2 completely different compliments.
Yeah, Monica out here trying to be modest. Monica had 2 appearances on Around the Horn, and there was a whole damn feature about her in the Washington Post. I needed years before that. Years, I tell you. She just turned up and turked up just that fast.
Well, shout out to someone who we both adore, Jazz Ellis. She was a big piece of how all of that came together.
Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I think the most interesting thing, though, to happen at All-Star Weekend is that bizarre press conference that LeBron James gave.
Oh.
I've been off the socials for 2022, so I don't know too much about what the surrounding conversation has been. But did people find that all to be as weird as I did? I just found it, like, from top to bottom. One, your team's still playing, and you talk about how you are a Cav. What are you talking about, man? You've bailed on them twice. Your attachment to them is obviously quite transactional, which is fine. But when he did that, he's giving the props to Sam Presti for making all those trades, even though Sam Presti's team makes those trades because they ain't trying to be good right now or they are not good right now. And I just can't imagine what it's like if you own the team with him after all that happens. You're like, so we still playing for something or not, bro?
You know, so the morning after the press conference, Sportsman is like, Mom, what's your take? And I'm like, what? Like, this is LeBron just being LeBron and an orchestrator of whatever he thinks is going to happen in the future. Everybody spun it toward his recruiting, I guess, if you could use that word, for his son and their future opportunity to play together. And I do think that's history LeBron would be cool making, but I definitely went and Googled Bronny, who was ranked 43 in the class of 2023, and he's got some work to do. Like, I'm like, does being on the G League roster for the organization count as playing together?
I mean, if LeBron want to go down there to Fort Wayne, you know what I'm saying? Sioux City, make it happen.
Get a couple games in. I actually kind of spun it even further, Bo, and wondered about LeBron as the owner. Like, does he actually admire Presti that much? There might be some sort of opportunity to team up down the road. But, I mean, the picks are cool, but the only time that OKC has actually been viable was when the former Big Three was together. And so I'm not quite sure how that all measures up.
Yeah, no, let me tell you something about you mentioning Bronny being 43 in his class, because I don't think that people really get the context of what those numbers are when you start talking about coming into the league. So I just picked 2013 because I had pulled up Julius Randle's basketball reference page while we were talking, right? So I'm looking at the 2013 recruiting class that Julius Randle was in. I've sorted that by win shares.
Okay.
Players that have 10 or more win shares in the NBA from that class, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Number 12 is Noah Vonleh, just to give you context. Mm-hmm. Number 11 is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. That is to say, you don't get 43 players per year from the United States who are good enough to like to play in the NBA. Not just come out here, make a quick little stop, you know, but to actually play in the NBA. It ain't 40-something dudes. That's not what it is. Like a 40, like number 43, you might have a big jump once you first get to college, but this dude's had exposure to all the resources and everything else, right? Like, I don't think there's going to be like a giant leap after he gets there. And so what he probably is a good college player, which, by the way, is hard to do, right? There ain't that many good college players out there. But the pressure that I feel like has to be on Bronny and all of this, man. Like, yo, LeBron going to be out there 55 years old, still waiting on Bronny to get it together. Like, maybe they want to go over somewhere and learn a new language. You know what I'm saying? Go over there, see what Spain hitting on, see what Italy talking about. You know, they might want to go super gangster with it. Lithuania, you know? Maybe, I don't know.
That too would be history for sure. And then the other part, like people were saying it facetiously. What if Bronny doesn't want to play with his dad? Like, I get that. I don't think that that's real if they have the opportunity. But I do just feel for him. Like, you will never live up to your dad's basketball shadow. Like, never.
It's not fair. You can't.
It's just not fair.
You can't. Mm-mm. And does Bronny want to do that? Like, nobody, like, I think that's a fair question. Because, I mean, I know you went to school close to home. You're from around D.C. You went to Georgetown. All I knew was that I wasn't going to school at home. I had no interest in going to school where my parents lived. And then, of course, I went to school in Atlanta after my dad had already moved there and my mom was moving there soon. But I misunderstood. My dad wasn't trying to kick it with me neither, right? Like, I had that space to roam. You out here with your pops all the time. You know, LeBron been traveling for the league all these years. He ain't used to spending that much time around him. He may have been just like, yo, this dude is really annoying.
That's true. That's actually true. Wow, I didn't think about it that way.
I mean, the Lakers, before the season started, and people were talking super team about them, and I was like, nah, this ain't it. This is, yeah, this ain't it. Even with, like, the top three guys, like, with LeBron, LeBron's still excellent, but LeBron is not like 2012 LeBron. Like, this is a different caliber player. You're not going to win a championship or be a championship contender by sheer virtue of having LeBron on the team, which was the case through like 2010, you know, all with those late Cavs teams. They did have chances to win a championship only purely because that dude was on the team. The Anthony Davis thing is just, you know, kind of what it is. But Westbrook, this was imminently predictable the way that it could wind up going. And so now, what do you do? Like, I don't think LeBron went to the Lakers for basketball reasons. I think he just wanted to be out there in L.A., right? I don't think he went to Cleveland the second time for basketball reasons. I think he just wanted to be back at the crib. That happens. But he's still trying to accomplish basketball goals. LeBron James, after 20 years in the NBA, is available.
Mm-hmm.
How much are you willing to sacrifice as a team to do that? Like, the Cavs, with what they've built or what they're building and what seems to be there, and they're like, yo, okay, we can just get LeBron, but they'd have to probably do something with some of the pieces that they have. I'm looking at that like Dan Gilbert would love nothing more in this world than to look LeBron James in the face and be like, we good. Thanks for asking, but we straight.
You think he would?
There's no reason to believe they like each other, right? Like, they had a transactional relationship and it came back around, and I'm sure it hurt Dan Gilbert to humble himself and be like, you're right. You want championships before us. We terrible without you. Come back. But now that they got something built that's moving, and 40-year-old LeBron is like, yo, I'm trying to come back, I think he would love nothing more than to say, thanks, but no thanks, homie.
But take the petty out of it, Bo. From a business standpoint, LeBron is Cleveland, is Ohio, Akron, whatever you want to call it. Like, from a business standpoint.
This is what I think. I think that there is a possibility, not a guarantee, but a possibility that that team is top 2-3 in the East next year. I mean, I guess they're basically around there now, right? But, you know, I still I don't look at them. I look at Miami and Milwaukee, right? Maybe it's just because they got older players and more experience, but I still feel like that's a tier above where they are. But they mess around and get some experience, and they up there contending for being the best team in the East. It could go either way, right? Like, Dan Gilbert could be like, yo, this is the thing that pushes us over the top. But he could also have a house that they filling up every night already, a team that's already got the city excited. Like, I was actually surprised that the ovation that LeBron got was so rousing in Cleveland, because I thought the relationship was a bit too complex for them to wind up just unadulterated throaty applause for him. But they're also the people who give throaty applause to their ultimate tormentor, Michael Jordan. So, I mean, I don't really understand how they operate there. I don't.
I will say this, fun little anecdotal story. We were checking in media stuff, and I guess the woman in front of me was local. But the security guard was super cool. Everybody just kind of started talking. And he was like, LeBron can't be the king in L.A. Kobe's the king in L.A. Like, that's never going to change. He was like, he's coming home. Watch, he's coming home. He's the king of Cleveland. And so I just kind of, you know, pocketed that. Like I said, good little anecdote. I do think there's some truth to that. I never really thought that LeBron was going to finish a Laker. And I know that question has been bantered around. I thought he was always going to come home to Cleveland. Now, whether or not it's going to be a good fit and Dan Gilbert wants to do it is a whole nother conversation. But I just kind of always felt that he was kind of tethered to Cleveland.
See, I thought he was going to finish with the Lakers because I thought LeBron was going to get there and it would take a year to get it rolling, and then that thing would turn into a machine. Like, that that was my thought. And after 2 years, it kind of looked like that was what was going to happen, right? Like, he got hurt. They had the young guys. They traded all of them but one, and then wound up getting Anthony Davis. They pulled it off last year. And then I thought, it's okay, we're going to keep this thing going. And so I thought that there are too many good reasons for him to be in Los Angeles. And that's why I thought that he would ultimately wind up being there. I'm going to tell you this, though, boy. Good luck telling. I guess it won't matter to Bronny because he'll be out of the house by then. But poor Bryce. Ain't mess around and tell Bryce. Like, he already did it to him once. Hey, Bryce, we're leaving Miami and going back to Cleveland. Why? Why are we going back to Cleveland? I don't understand. Now, my girl Zuri, right?
She's so cute.
She is. And now, she been out there, like, she did the Cleveland thing, but she was real little for the Cleveland thing. Now I'm sure she got her old house in the backyard. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? She got all that. And now we gonna go back to the act.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Also,
let me just shout out Savannah and Zuri. She looks as good as she looks in pictures. No filter. This is real life. So just shout out to all this beautiful Black family.
They deserve, man. They deserve. They do. And they deserve better than going to Cleveland. And see, I feel like for him, though, there ain't a lot of winning there. In a, like, not just winning basketball games, but I mean, if they got a halfway decent team and then he joins it, the expectation is going to be championships that they may not be good enough to win, right? He can mess up the young core that they've got there. Like, he already brought them the championship they never thought that they'd ever receive in life. And so, like, I don't see the upside for him in going there. There's nothing left to accomplish here. Maybe he just wants to make sure that when he retires, he gets, you know, bathed in cheers at the last arena. I don't know, but I just don't feel like, I don't feel like there's anything good for him to get out of that. But I also agree with you about L.A. You're right. It's always going to be Kobe's. That was the case before we lost Kobe. But that was always great. They love Kobe. I mean, they love Kobe more than they love Magic. Like, it's a whole nother thing with them.
And again, I'm picking quotes from the weekend, and maybe this was not LeBron's intention, but the one asterisk that I might have in terms of him going back without busting up this young core entirely, he said that it wasn't going to be about money if he had the opportunity to play with his son. So if he's at a place in his career where money is not the driving factor, and I think when you look at, I know he's got a ton of businesses in LA, but when I think of the I Promise School, his connection to that community, I just have a hard time seeing him not finishing his career in Cleveland for whatever that means. Now, I don't know if he'd be willing to pull a Tom Brady and take less money. And maybe the deal with Dan Gilbert is you get my son to this organization as well. But I just kind of feel like that's the storybook personally. Because, I mean, he'll go back to LA and live and, you know, be a businessman and all that. And it'll be great.
Now, let me ask you this.
Okay.
If you one of these dudes, right, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, like one of these young dudes for the Cavs that's, you know, getting this thing going. Is this what you want? Do you want LeBron coming in? Like, we saw part of the thing with Kyrie was he was getting a little comfortable. This is my squad. And that's when they were losing. And he was like, hey, LeBron came. This isn't what I wanted. These cats are building up something that is their own. Do they want it to become LeBron's?
I think we'd have to answer the question at what cost. Darius, Evan, Jarrett. We got to see how Karis plays out. But, like, those three, to me, are the core of what's happening. And I asked Darius, you know, when did you know the job was going to be special? He was like, training camp. You could just tell, you know, we were different. People had gone in the offseason, handled their business. Like, we had a formidable front. Can you keep those three and have LeBron? And talking with Darius, I think that those guys would be okay because they are true students of the game and want to be pushed and want to be better, right? And so, and personality-wise, oh, the three of them are very low-key. And so I think that they would be okay if LeBron came and obviously was serious about basketball and made them better. And whatever the circus that comes with him, he's still the focal point. But, like, on a basketball front, if they can stay together, I think they would be okay with it. I think so. Yes. I just don't know if it's realistic that they get to stay together.
Even with low-key cats, through the course of time, I ain't one really to be out here underestimating the effect of ego in things.
Yeah.
And not even – so, for example, Kevin Durant going to the Warriors. Everybody's like, ah, Steph's cool. Everything will be okay. I mean, and they won. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not going to pretend like the outcomes were bad necessarily. But you can see it was an adjustment, right? Like, for Steph, I think he probably viewed himself as, hey, I wouldn't care about that. I'm Steph Curry. I'm a good guy. And then you start realizing what the differences are. And you kind of like, oh, I don't really know about this. Like, the example I use for my own life, and it's obviously, like, worked out well in the end because I love this guy. But when I started working with Dan in Miami, Dan sees himself as a very giving, incredibly selfless person, and he is. He took his name off the show and everything for me to be involved, right? There's no disputing that. But it was an adjustment, right? Like, he had never had to share in that way before, as he did having to do a show with me. And for both of us, we had to kind of figure that out and the ego stuff that comes with it, no matter what we thought about ourselves on the front end. And so I feel like if these cats, if they really get it going, somebody signed an extension, you know, you're starting to feel like this thing is mine. And then somebody comes in, it's like, come on, dog, you know it is mine. That's hard, man.
It is hard. But Darius Garland is in his third year. Evan Mobley's a rookie. Like, you know what I mean? I think that the youth is on their side and probably, quite honestly, been enamored with LeBron and watching him all their career. We'll see.
You think coming out the East?
I've been hard pressed to go against the Bucks as the reigning champs, but listen to me. If the Nets get it together in terms of everybody's healthy, that team to me is very, very dangerous.
I agree with you on the if with the Nets, but that's very much so in the if was a fifth category. we're asking for a lot on like if doing a lot of work when we start talking about them cats being healthy. Because we got to remember, them dudes ain't young no more. Yep. You know, like we're asking for a lot. But Miami was my team I thought was going to win the East before the season started. And then I looked up after I had spent all my time watching all that football and started getting, you know, get back into my NBA playing shape. And I'm like, oh, look who's back up there at the top. Right. And I just feel like it's an experience factor. And when I start thinking about playoff basketball, like this ain't the playoff basketball that I grew up with, but they are the toughest team that anybody's going to have to go up against. They ain't going to give you nothing. You're going to have to take everything you get from them in a way that outside of the Bucks, I don't think applies to anybody else in the East.
I would agree with you. And so early season games, take what you want from them. But I will tell you that I had Milwaukee in Miami, Miami minus Jimmy Butler. PJ was playing that game. Bam Adebayo. And they gave the Bucks the business, right? And that early season game, whatever. But I do think that there is something there in which, whether it's Bam or Jimmy, I don't think a team in the East matches up with the Bucks as well as Miami, both physically but also mentally, because they have played these little mind games with Giannis. And I, you know, talking to the Bucks side, there's this notion that when he plays Miami, of not forcing it, which I think throws him for a complete loop. And then you look at the supporting cast that Miami is developing. Shout out to my boy, Omar Yurtseven, Georgetown. God, they just need to win a conference game, but whatever. I think Vic Oladipo coming back is going to be a helpful thing for them. The kid, Max Strus from DePaul, like it's almost like the Warriors in terms of developing those secondary guys the way they did last year. People are like, who? And now they are playing valuable minutes for this Miami Heat squad. So I'm with you. Like, it's Bucks, but it's not, to me, a wide margin.
Well, the other thing that could be wild about the first round of the playoffs is, and I guess, you know, things will improve when Kevin Durant gets back, but there's a distinct possibility the Nets are going to be in the play-in, which means that they're going to be dealing with either the top seed or the second seed in the first round if they get out of the play-in. And, that will be interesting.
Do I believe the Nets are actually sticking the play-in? I don't know about that one, bro.
Because they look like a machine when Kyrie's out there, and they look like an NBA team when he's not.
But see, here's the thing. I kind of just wish they had held the line, because I thought that they had a chance to be really good without Kyrie. Like, I didn't. I was so over that conversation at the beginning of the year, like, whatever. And I kept saying to people, two things can be true. I respect your decision as a man, whether I agree or disagree, but it is also causing problems behind the scenes, right? Like, I remember the press conference that James was like, man, I'm just going to give him a shot. Hell, like, and it was like, this is not going well.
Yeah, that I'm with you on the hold the line, right? Mm-hmm. It just feels like a panic move during the Omicron crunch of late 2021 that almost feels like it never happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, everybody got it. Okay, cool. League came back around. You don't even hear too much about positive COVID tests at this point because the whole damn league just had it, right? You know, like all those things wound up going down for them. And my thought really was you just can't be half in. And I don't know why Durant or Nash or anybody else thought that that was possible. Now, who knows? It may have worked out well because it finally pushed James Harden to the brink, and maybe Ben Simmons is a better fit than an aging James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, maybe that goes. None of us have any idea what you're going to get out of Ben Simmons. I mean, I think that's not fair. I think we know that you're going to get an elite defensive player, a great playmaker, a spectacular athlete, and then we're going to get to the playoffs, and then we don't know what the hell you're going to get out of him.
See, I think too much has been made of that, Bo. Like, he's going to be that in the playoffs. There's no reason for him to have to take a last-minute shot on this roster. Like, there's no reason.
But how about a shot?
Honestly, if you're going to defend 1-5 and give me 8 assists, like, don't shoot. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, I feel you. But this is my counterpoint. It's going to be hard for him to get 8 assists when people just stop guarding him.
He's
no different than Tony Allen was in the playoffs to me.
He's not going to be that bad. Like, I just think this is overblown. I do want your astute and brilliant thought on what this means macro, though, in terms of how he forced his way out. Because all I keep thinking about is, what are these owners going to do the next CBA?
Well, I'll say this. First of all, they're going to do something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like something will stop this from happening. But as of now, he had to get back all the money.
That's true.
And that's the part I think that they can live with, right? Like, one thing that we've seen really as the results of the last 25 years of the collective bargaining agreement, I guess it's closer to 20. I think the 99 collective bargaining agreement coming out of that lockout is the one that really turned this. But the owners were operating on a premise that they had operated on before, which is, we can money whip you and get you to stay, right? Mm-hmm. Like, whatever happens, we'll just throw this money at you. But then they made it harder to money whip you with the max contract. And so Chris Webber is not staying in Sacramento under this current world order. He was willing to do so before because they could pay him so much more money than anybody else would, right? But then they realized the max contract for staying on your own team in the extra year just wasn't enough. They were making so much money that the security of the fifth year didn't matter as much. And then it's like, damn, we can't keep these guys here. And one basketball player can be so powerful that if they decide to do like James Harden and just be like, all right, I'll come, but I ain't gonna be happy about it, and you ain't either, then they could wind up making a move. Right. But with Simmons, I think their thought on it is, and I think this applies to most people, he ain't trying to give up no $20 million. But he did.
Yeah, he did.
And so I don't know what you can do to account for that part. Because the only punishment that you can give a guy like that is, fine, we won't pay you.
Right.
And he said, cool, don't pay me. Or well, right. He wasn't that cool. They're going to try to get it back. But he was willing, if nothing else came down to it, to take a $20-something million dollar haircut to not play. And confuse all of us, right?
Absolutely.
Just totally confuse all of us. But his play, and I don't know if there's a solution to this. Look, man, once people throw out mental health, we ain't got exactly. No avenue to deal with that if you don't believe them. And see, that was the thing with the Sixers. The Sixers were like, okay, well, give us some stuff so that we can believe you. And he's like, nope, not doing that. Not doing that. It can mean so many different things. Like, for example, his refusal to shoot is a mental health issue, but I don't know if that's enough of a mental health issue that you can't come to work.
Yeah.
That's where I'm lost. I don't know what there is for anybody to do on that one, because you say it, ain't nobody coming out and going to chastise you for it, because then you're going to wind up being the jerk. So all they could do is not pay you. And he was like, all right, cool. I don't want to be there. I personally would have never traded for him under any circumstance whatsoever.
Really? Okay.
Never. Never. Can't win with him.
Okay. Because you can't win with him.
Can't win with him. And the comments that Doc and Embiid made after the game, relative to what had happened, were so delicate. You can't handle that? Then that means we can't tell you anything in the world. And I can't have you around if I can't tell you nothing.
Okay, so I had that thought. Somewhere for me, I don't believe he's that fragile. I just think he wanted out. And to your point, like, if you're going to say mental health is a period and not a comma at the end of that statement, okay, fine. But I just think he just didn't want to be there that much.
There's that too.
I just think he doesn't want to be there that much, which is wild to me, but okay.
Yo, well, that's the thing to me, and this is why I wouldn't want him. They coddled him. They did so much to try to protect him throughout this whole thing. They tried to get him shooting coaches, right? Like, they were patient with him in a way that I personally never would have been. That was the problem I had on the other end, is that for him to turn that around and then be like, yeah, man, they turned on me. Yes, they turned on you. You were right. The basket was right there. It was right there. And you 6'10". All you had to do was go up. And the comparison to him is Giannis. And again, I'm not the first person to make this point, so I don't want to pretend like I'm out here putting you up on game that you didn't have. Mm-hmm. But I gained so much respect for Giannis last year because of the air balls. Totally unafraid of being embarrassed. Never quit. Kept shooting those free throws, except for the fourth quarter, but for strategic purposes, not fear purposes, didn't go to the basket the same way he did. But with us laughing at him all across America, he stood tall on it. And this dude backed out when somebody was mildly critical of the fact that in game 7, you skipped a dunk over Trader Barge. It wasn't like John Collins was there. It was Trader Barge.
I think that was such a glaring moment in his career. It is what we are left with. But I don't think that's going to be an issue in Brooklyn. I really don't.
Well, here's my Simmons shooting issue. And I want to get your thoughts on this. For people who don't know, Monica played at Georgetown, so she know more about basketball than anybody that we done brought on this show at any point. I think that people make too much of Ben Simmons not shooting threes and don't make enough of Ben Simmons not shooting anything. If it's not right by the basket, he just won't shoot. And that's why I compare him to Tony Allen, because we can just back completely off you.
I think the biggest difference, though, for Tony Allen is I still think that Ben is dangerous on a different level in transition as both a facilitator and a scorer, right? I have a hard time believing that at this point you are one of the biggest spectacles in the league. You get your way and now you about to do the same stuff. Like, I just have a hard time believing it's going to go that way. Not only are you about to do the same stuff, you're about to do the same stuff alongside Kevin Durant? Like, no.
Yo, what Kevin Durant going to say to me? Guess who over here doing the same stuff alongside Kevin Durant? Kyrie? In fact, he doing new stuff.
That's different. I don't know what little tea party they be having and why they are such good buddies. That's different. I don't know what's going on there. That's different. I just think we're about to get sort of the Ben Simmons that have folks wondering whether or not he could really be a star in this league. I think we're going to skip past game 7, didn't take the dunk, Ben Simmons, and get back to the good Ben Simmons.
I think they're the same person.
I don't think they're the same person. I don't know what was going on with him in that series, but I don't think they're the same person. Like, there's, bro, like, if he wouldn't have been, no, I don't think they're the same person. I don't think they're the same. I think that that is such a moment, and our sports consumption is about moments. I get it. I think that is such a moment that it's hard for everybody to shake it. I don't think he's going to be that guy in Brooklyn.
Now, I want to get to one last team before we get out here. We've been rolling. This has been fun. We got to do this again. Monica's been too busy. We've been trying to get Monica on this show for months.
Dude, do you months. Also know how, like, intimidating you are? I'm like, Bo's so brilliant. He knows everything. I have to be ready to be smart on his podcast.
All you got to do is come on and talk. Like, I need you to understand this. I send people text messages that's like, yo, here's something you might want to work on. Yo, here's something you might want to work on. I be sending you text messages like, damn! You cold. You're in the space. You're all good. You good buddy here. But the Warriors.
Okay.
I have felt like it's so unfair what people have expected of Klay Thompson. Dude, tore his Achilles, tore his ACL in his 30s. And they're like, oh, wait till Klay come back. It hasn't been bad since he's come back, but I feel like it hadn't been great.
A lot of his comeback has been without Draymond, though, too.
Yes.
Which I think you can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I agree with you, and it was not disrespect to the Warriors at all, but everybody's like, they're going to get so much better. Klay's not even here. And I'm like, Klay coming, to your point about your experience with HQ and Dan and whatever could or could not happen in Cleveland, Klay coming back is about to change the Warriors as we know them. Yes, that dynamic trio was incredible, but Juan Toscano-Anderson, Steph's brother-in-law, what's his name? Damian Lee, like Gary Payton Jr., like those guys have carved out space. And not that they don't want to improve, and Klay certainly helps them improve. Andrew Wiggins, for that matter. Like this too is going to have an adjustment period. And so I just think that people think winning is a little easier than it actually is. And if you actually listen to Draymond talk about winning, like, it's not that easy. I even think the time when he comes back, I know that that gets them back to the original Warriors that we thought they would be. But to me, continuity matters. Peaking at the right time in the season matters.
So this is my thing about Klay. And get this before we start wrapping this up. He is currently shooting 37% from three, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't give you no nickname for shooting 37% from three. They ain't no Splash Brothers
regular
at 37% from three. That's not what this is. And I've always felt that so much of what they did was predicated not on Steph and Klay being good three-point shooters, not even on being great three-point shooters, but being excellent, like top 10 all-time level three-point shooters. And neither of them is playing at that level at this point. And so what I don't know myself is how much those other guys are going to be able to do in the playoffs to pick this up. Because in the playoffs, it becomes a lot less about your roster 1 through 9 and a lot more about your roster 1 through 7 and a lot more about your roster 1 through 3.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I think, but you know what? It's funny to look at Klay's numbers like that, because Steph hit a slump by Steph's comparison for a minute this season after he broke the record. And so I think the identity of the Warriors is shifting a little bit. And when they played, they blew out the Bulls, and I was so pissed, Bo. I was on the sideline with so much good content on the Bulls that it never got made the show. But anyway, prior to that game, Steve Kerr made the point, and I thought it was really, really smart when you think about it. He's like, Steph doesn't really know what a good shot is. Like, he's not had to take good shots over his career. And so now, working through this slump, it's like, dude, take a good shot to get you going. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, I just take the shots that I take, right? And so I think this team is probably growing more than people realize in terms of how it all works together again with the current pieces and the way that the league is playing this team. Like, there are now 5+ years of this is what the Warriors do, and a team like Memphis that is growing and really hangs their head on defense. Okay, we want all the smoke. Like, let's go. We're going to give you our best defensive strategy and see what happens. And I think it's playing differently against the Warriors now.
Yeah, we got so much NBA to talk about. And so little time right now, you have unfortunately talked your way back onto this show. I don't know if you realize that or not. We're going to figure that time. You are coming back. That is Monica McNutt. Check her out on Around the Horn. Check her out on a lot of our basketball coverage. You do radio stuff too, right?
I do jump in on some radio stuff. Yeah, man. I'm all over
yeah,
the place.
Check her there. Check her on MSG where you see she trying not to laugh. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to be the one.
I love my Knicks.
Hey, love them. Love them. I mean, it's better to laugh than to cry if you love them. You know what I'm saying? That's how y'all keep the peace. But thank you so much for joining us. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain and Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, Follow the right time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Oh, by the way, thank you for watching on YouTube. Oh, by the way, Game Theory, HBO, March 13th. Check it out. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.